This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome, a podcast where I, your host, talk to other lead singers about what it's like to be the front man or front woman of a professional, or sometimes not, maybe not even professional, not fully professional, sometimes, rock and roll band. Today on the show, great episode, I speak to not one, but two front men of the band Alisana? I don't even know what it is. I think it's I say Alisana. But we say, see, I'm Canadian and we say some weird things. Like we say pasta, actually. We don't say pasta. And I don't know what's correct. I mean, you know, hey, whatever. You know, tomato, tomato. It's whatever. Anyways, hey, the guys from Alisana are here. First of all, I'm sorry about the audio quality. It's kind of sketchy, and there's some weird noises and stuff. Dennis clearing his throat, and they're in a Starbucks and everything else. So I do apologize for the audio. However, this is a great chat and a very honest chat about what the band has gone through. You know, basically being the hottest thing out there and things fading away and them holding on but still doing it, albeit on a somewhat part-time basis. Anyways, before we get to that, I'd like to wish everyone a happy Family Day. That's what we have in Canada. It's called Family Day, which basically we just do that so that we can have a holiday like America. But we don't have presidents. Hey, you don't really have a president either. But we don't have presidents, so we just said Family Day, which is, it's the biggest cop-out for holiday ever. But that's fine because I think there should be even more holidays so people can spend more time with their families. Oh my God, I just got it. The holiday totally makes sense. Before we get into this for real though, I got to tell you about one thing and one thing only, and that is the All Access Club. I harp on it every week. I'm going to do this one real fast this time. Basically, I just want you to go to leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. That'll take you to the Patreon page where we've set up, basically you can pledge as little as $6 and get a whole bunch of stuff. It really helps us keep the lights on around here. So definitely check that out. Again, I'm not going to go through all the things you're going to get. A lot of them are really cool, and I'm having so much fun on the Facebook group. Shout out to everybody on there. But just check it out again. It's leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. Also, I should say one more thing. If you are Canadian and you live in Canada, or if you're American and live in Canada, actually, if you're going to be in Canada in April, Silverstein is going on tour with the almighty Good Charlotte, which if you told me that about 10 years ago, I would not have believed you. So that will be a very cool and different tour for us. So I'm excited. Tickets are on sale now. I don't know, goodcharlotte.com or something. I don't know. You'll find it. And I will see you all there. Let's get to this week's episode and my conversation with Dennis and Sean of Alisana.
Hello.
Is that Dennis?
This is Dennis.
It's been so long.
It has been. What's going on, man?
Dude, I'm just hanging out at home, just chilling.
Okay.
I tried calling Sean. Should I give him a call now? Is he going to answer?
I think so. He's out in the van. I just walked into Starbucks.
Oh, Starbucks. That's a shame.
Yeah.
You know, the tour is safe. It's Starbucks.
Yeah, it's a tour oasis. We come to replenish our Wi-Fi and our caffeine.
All right, I'm gonna link in Sean here. Let's see if I get him.
Okay, cool.
Or if he's gonna be a son of a bitch. Oh wait, no, I don't want to FaceTime him. Fuck. Is it Milk? Is that his last name, Milk?
Milky.
Milky?
Yeah, Milky.
I like that.
Old Mr. Milky. Oh, we love it. And no one gets it right. Okay.
All right. Now I'm going to call Sean, and we're going to do a three-way.
A three-way.
We're going to have a three-way.
Get pumped.
Hi.
Do we have everybody?
Hey. Technology. Huh.
Yes. It works.
Love it.
Kind of. It doesn't sound great, but hey, you know what? Fuck it.
This works.
Someone's in a super noisy location. What's going on? Okay, well, hey, whatever. Dude, I was just reminiscing with Dennis before we got this shit going, man. It has been so long since I have crossed paths with you guys. How you been, Sean?
Really good, man. Yeah, it's been, holy hell, a lot of you. Just saw you, man.
Yeah, geez. I'm like, I remember the last tour we did together, I think, was like back in like 2009 or something.
Oh, my God.
Or maybe a million years ago. I don't know. It's a million years. It really has been a long time, but it's really good to have you guys. I know you guys are on tour right now, so thanks for taking the time. Where are you? Whereabouts are you right now?
We're like somewhere in between Seattle and San Francisco. Somewhere.
Yeah, we're like in Grant Pass. I know we're right in between Oregon and Northern California because one side is mountains and the rest of it looks like Lord of the Rings hills. So, I think we're actually going to visit Dougie tonight up in Chico, California.
There you go.
Old tour manager Dougie.
So it's the classic Monday day off.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, exactly.
Which for most people listening, they won't know that. But Monday is typically the day that bands take off and don't play shows. Yeah. And I don't really know why that is. I guess just because
kids don't get shows on Monday.
I guess. Yeah, but there's never shows on Monday. It's a weird thing.
A lot of driving and nothing fun.
Yeah.
So, I got to ask you guys, man, like, it has been so long. You guys have been pretty much active this whole time. I know Sean, I know you have a family and you have children now. And I know there's been some side projects, but pretty much Alisana has been going this whole time. And one of the things that really has struck me about your band and your band's career is just how many different record labels you've been on, different management situations you've been on, and all that stuff. Kind of the behind the scenes stuff, which is kind of interesting, and we talk a lot about on this show. So how has that journey been for you guys, and how are you feeling about everything right now?
Well, I think when we
and whoever wants to answer can answer.
Yeah, for sure. I think when we finished our deal with Fearless, it was more about trying something new. We never had bad relationships or anything anywhere. We've actually been treated really well everywhere, including at Epitaph. But it was more just about like, hey, we've done this for so many years. Let's try something different. And shortly after we put out the record with Epitaph, we got interested in the idea of just putting music out on our own. And that's when I started up the Revival. And, you know, it's kind of been awesome because not that we ever had really strict situations at labels, but, you know, labels are still labels. And we have to do things to sort of appease what they need and want. And it's been fun creatively just to get to do whatever the hell we want.
No, it's awesome. And it's funny. It brings me back to a conversation, Sean, that you and I had. I can remember it very vividly. I have a strange memory for specific conversations, but you guys were a newer band, and you were playing with us at the Rave in Milwaukee, and it was like a one-off show. You remember that show? Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember talking to you, Sean, specifically about like managers, and you know, and you were kind of complaining that your manager, you know, for lack of a better term, like had his hand in your pocket, and you were required to send, you know, merch money to your manager, like pretty much every, whatever it was, like every week. I don't know what it was. And, you know, and you had to pay your manager this cut, and then you guys didn't really have any money. And I was just like, that's so fucked up. Like, cause at that point, Silverstein, we didn't even have a manager. And I was like, that's so crazy that you're paying all of this money, you know, and your band is not making any, and that was eye-opening for me. But I remember your reaction, Sean, was like you were like, you looked so upset. Like, you looked sad. and it makes sense
sad.
Now. Well, I mean, now, it makes sense now that you've figured it out, you know, hey, this is what we need to do to be sustainable. And that's pretty cool that after being on Fearless and Epitaph, and I know you did stuff with Artery, but I guess that was more a management thing. But whatever it is, now you're back, you know, doing your own thing, like being a DIY band. And has that been, I guess that's been really good for you guys.
That was our very first manager. And when you're like, I feel like I have to be like every band that when you're first starting out, there's no like rule book or instructions, you know, in the music industry. And everybody gets caught up with a couple of creeps. And so that's one of the things, like, with every band, with maturity, you start to realize, like, you actually need to be working with decent people. And, you know, you want the big name, but you want to make sure they're, like, down to earth and they have the same goals that your band does, you know, so you have their best interest. So that's why Artery is in an awesome fit.
Right, and lucky for us, shortly after that conversation with you, Shane, we got out of that terrible situation. And we got to get in with Eric Rushing, who's been, you know, a mentor to us for so many years in our career, and he's helped me learn so many things, and which has enabled me to do all the things that we're doing now on our own.
That is crazy.
So I guess my conversation with you helped.
It really is crazy, man. That's cool. And I guess, like, you know, with that stuff, I mean, like, I guess now you can basically just do whatever the fuck you want. I mean, like, I don't know if you've ever had labels telling you what kind of music to make, or, hey, we need a radio song, which, I mean, let's be honest, Alisana is not getting played on the radio anytime soon. Was that ever a struggle for you guys, like dealing with labels on that end? Is it nice now to be able to just do anything?
I think it's kind of towards producers and stuff in the past, but now that, I think when somebody works with us for long enough, they realize it's really kind of not going to go into a category and kind of got to roll with it. And the kids seem to really appreciate that.
I think for a while there was some self-imposed pressure, I guess. Just, you know, what's the next step and how do you move up to another level? Is it a radio single? Were the labels right? That kind of thing. But I think one of the things we wised up to over the years was just to keep doing it our own way. And that has proven well for us because we've got the type of fan base, like Dennis said, that really respects what we do and loves that we, you know, put our art before everything else.
No, and that's really cool. And I think that's something I found out about you guys very early on, was that you were going to do it your way. You had a very strong, especially you, Sean, you had a very strong vision of what you wanted your band to be, what image you wanted to have, what music you wanted to create. I mean, like, even just talking about your music, you know, I remember one time I was watching you guys and our guitar player Josh was like, they just do like exciting parts. Like, they just do like an exciting part and then another exciting part and then another exciting part. And it's like so great live. We're so boring, like, with our like verse, chorus, bridge. Like, it's so predictable. And that's one thing about your band that I think is like kind of made you guys special, is that it seems like there are no rules with your songwriting. You pretty much just are going to be like, hey, this is a part and we're going to play this part and we like it and we don't really care. Is that accurate to how you guys write songs?
Oh, definitely. We've always had like a what's best goes kind of mentality, where even if it doesn't make musical sense or structural sense, if we dig the part and it vibes with what we're trying to do, we fucking do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it goes the same lyrically writing with Sean, and that it's been way different than my experience writing by myself, where sometimes, I mean, it's really you checking yourself, but being able to work with another partner, it's not brutal, but yeah, sometimes you'll write a line and you know it's like, eh, and then they're just gonna call it. I'm like, dude, that's not good enough. Like, okay, and you steer in a different direction, but it helps, you know, when you're listening to albums years later, there's not that many lines like, oh, I wish we did a better one there, because you kind of just get it out of the way right then. So
absolutely, you're not gonna you're not even gonna actually like suggest anything that you might think is remotely shitty, because you know. Yeah, either Sean or Dennis will be like, no, dude, no. And you know it's shit. I love that. That's so true. Because, you know, I'm a notoriously slow lyric writer. And I don't know how it is with you guys, but I'll sit on my couch, like, I don't know, watching, like, DVDs of The Simpsons or something, and I'll just, like, try to think of lyrics. And if I come up with, like, one or two good lines in, like, a whole night, that's a success for me. But there always is that time when you're like, when you come up with a line, and you know it's not really good, and then you just like, whatever, you know. And it, I guess when you're dealing with another person, you know, you can't.
I think with it being the collaborative way we do it, and the fact that we tell stories, makes the whole experience way different than a normal lyric writing process would tend to be.
Yeah. With the whole Annabelle trilogy was tricky because you didn't want to repeat yourself, but at the same time, you wanted to allude to different things that had happened over, you know, the three album project. So it was interesting. It was interesting.
Yeah, no, but I know it's wrapped up now. The Annabelle trilogy, which is crazy. I mean, bands have enough trouble just writing one concept record, let alone three of them. So that's crazy. I guess I'll ask you guys how that idea came about, and do you have any regrets about committing so much of your career to that, you know, that one story?
I think the first time we thought about writing a story was when we were writing our first record, and we wrote one song as a story, the last three letters of the story, and we were like, that would kind of be cool to just do in general, instead of basing our songs off of other stories, we kind of do it at times, like just write our own. And I don't think a trilogy was really on the table at the time. It was more like when we went to write the second record. And the record after the first concept one was like, oh, we could just maybe continue with it and try and dig a little deeper and see what we can do. But at that point, we knew it would be a trilogy. Once we were going to do two, we were definitely in for three.
That's crazy. Yeah. I mean, it's committing so much of that time. Are there any regrets there? Or are you ever like, oh man, like, just like, let's say you're in the middle of, sorry, go ahead.
Not with Alisana. And that's the other interesting thing. Like, Sean has such a pop punk background and I'm such a metalhead that like, I've thought of other things I would like to write about, but like, that's not an Alisana song. That'd be like a metal song. And so for to stay true to the spirit of what we were trying to do with Alisana, I don't have any regrets about it. I think that was the right move.
Yeah.
To really, we're trying to get the kids engrossed into the music so far that it makes them start picking up books. And I think by doing such a project on that scale and then writing a book to go with it has really accomplished what we're trying to do.
Absolutely.
I mean, time will tell.
Yeah.
I mean, we're lucky enough to be a band whose band's name is synonymous with a story, you know, and it's tough to find any regrets when you've been able to pull something like that off. You know, if the Annabelle trilogy goes hand in hand with Alisana, that's something we never thought we'd be able to pull off. It's pretty damn cool.
Right. No, I know. I just think about like, you know, some of the, like we did a concept record called Shipwreck in the Sand, which was probably the one coming out when we toured last together. And, and I found one thing that was difficult for me was you're telling a story and you want to have, you know, let's say a song is kind of like a chapter and you kind of want to tell this bigger story that you're telling, but then also you need it kind of to make sense on its own.
Within the song. Oh, yeah.
To where like, you know, especially these days when something comes on shuffle, you want things to kind of make sense in terms of just a song standing on its own. And I want to ask you, as songwriters, how challenging was that, especially when you're trying to do it for three records in a row?
Yeah, I think we were very conscious from the jump about it was, hey, this needs to be a concept, it needs to be a story, and we want people who are trying to enjoy it on that level to be able to. But we also wanted the lyrics to work separate from that. So if somebody wanted to find their own meaning, whether personally or whatever, in that particular song, then they could still do that. And that, to me, was the most daunting part of the whole thing, because you would read through a song when you thought you had it done, and then you're like, all right, well, now does this work on its own? It's like, well, shit, no, not even close. And so you'd have to go back, kind of tweak it to make sure that it could, you know, work both ways.
Yeah, well, there is something about being vague in songwriting and stuff that some people will say, you know, you think of like a songwriter like Morrissey, who is not vague, who is very to the point and really can paint you always know what he's singing about pretty much. And then a lot of people, like, you know, my favorite vague band is like Face to Face. Like, you guys are old like me. So like, their lyrics are so vague. Like, I have no idea what they're talking about. But in a way, when you use those kind of vague lyrics, it almost makes it more relatable to the average person. And when you're telling a story, like if someone's like, here's Annabelle, and is like, I don't know, it's not really like speaking to me, well, they're kind of fucked for the rest of the record and then the next two, you know. So it's really putting a lot of eggs in one basket, you know.
the other trip I came from a huge visual arts background. Like I got five brothers and sisters. Everybody's a weaver or a potter. And I was actually in college for furniture design before I joined the band. I had the opportunity to work with a really great sequential artist, which is comic books. And going from that mentality, like whether it's Calvin and Hobbes or even like, you know, Marvel, the way they run those storylines is that anyone can pick up one and read it and they would have a story in itself. But if you got into the entire series, you know, there's a greater hierarchy to it. And so just taking that approach and trying to knit the song together like that so they can stand alone or work together was really helpful for me anyway with the layers of process steering in that direction.
No, that's really cool, and that's an amazing thing, and congratulations on completing the trilogy after all these years. Also, like you put out, did you put out three records on three different labels, right? For the Annabelle trilogy as well, and is that kind of suck from a business side in that you don't own the rights to everything and you can't put out like a triple vinyl or anything
That has definitely been a bit of a nightmare because there's a lot of stuff I've been starting to try to pull off. And there's so many more hoops and red tape to get through with other labels owning the material. And, maybe we want to do that. Like, it's just a lot of kind of annoying conversations and frustrating dead ends. It's not that it can't be pulled off, but if we had thought to do the own label thing back when we started it, things would be a hell of a lot different for sure.
Yeah, I know, and it is. If it was just two labels, you know, but three. Well, I guess it's your own label too is the third. But still, I mean, that's still you guys. So you mentioned Dennis. You know, you said you're a metal guy, and Sean is comes from a pop punk background. Now, being you know that you're two singers in the band, obviously. Sean is the clean, happy, nice pop punk guy, and Dennis is the scary metal guy. How difficult is it when you guys write songs to come up with who's going to do what where? And is there any ever butting heads over that? Because some bands, it's obvious. Like with Amity Affliction, I was talking to Joel. They have a pretty, they're very formulaic. You know, their chorus is coming and there's going to be singing. But with Alisana and your parts being. You never know. Kind of, you never know what your structure is going to be. How difficult is that for you guys?
It actually has kind of a natural order to it that, like, a lot of the parts that are really, like, visual, grandiose parts, I mean, just lends itself to kind of a metal feel. When you're talking about the more, like, down-to-earth, like, emotional side of the song, you know, that's definitely in Sean's corner. But I think the funny thing is that we've written each other's parts before, and some of like most brutal stuff Sean has written, and I'm screaming it. And some of like the really, really heartfelt things are my lines that end up getting sang. Like, it's cool because it's like something, you know, that I think, but God, I can't sing for shit. So I would never be able to pull it off. But able to hear my words come out of his pipe and land with the kids like that, just, it's fun. So it's always kind of worked like that, but it's always fun when you have these surprising moments. I'm like, damn, Sean, it's brutal.
No, that is cool, and that's actually something, you know, that doesn't get talked about at all, really, is, you know, the whole singing, screaming thing, which obviously I'm familiar with and you guys are familiar with. You never really hear people talk about, well, if you have a lyric, right, and the lyric has meaning, but how that lyric is delivered, you know, whether it's through melody or whether it's through screaming, can actually really impact what the words are saying, like what the meaning can be. And I wonder if there's ever been a specific time when you guys have been like, oh yeah, you scream, like you might scream something and it's like so brutal, but then when you sing it and you can hear it, you know, it'll paint a different picture, you know, or vice versa. Has that happened where you guys have switched it?
Yeah, I remember specific.
Just for the lyrics?
I remember a specific time. It was actually the opening track on The Emptiness, which was like three records ago. And we were trying it the other way. Like I was singing and he was screaming and blah, and it just wasn't feeling right. And then like the light bulb went off, like, let's just flip flop who's doing which line. And it worked so much better. And you're absolutely right how the energy or emotion of the way a part is delivered, whether it be singing or screaming, really matter with the lyrics that are accompanying, you know, that approach.
No, absolutely. That's yeah, that is super, super, super cool.
Yeah.
Who's in the wind tunnel?
It's great to have that as like a, I think we're both in the wind tunnel.
I think that's okay.
I think it's great to have that extra tool in this band's arsenal, that trying to control the dynamics, you know, because you don't want the record to be all one way and be able to switch it and gear it with the actual vocal technique as you're going. As the, I mean, it's a pain in the ass, but at the end of the day, it really helps.
Oh, that's sorry. That wind or whatever is like killing me.
I'm in the same spot I was.
That's okay, man. It's okay. We'll make it work. We'll make it work. Yeah, like your fan base is really, like you said, is really rabid. And obviously, you guys have done great, pretty much all over, you know, the place. But your fan base in South America and Mexico is like a whole nother animal. And I don't know, a lot of, you know, 75% of the people listening to this are American, and that's you know, that's the demographic or whatever. But so a lot of people won't know how massive you guys and how much success you've had in South America and Mexico. Can you talk a little bit about that and how that, like, what you attribute that to or how that started? Because that's so wild.
In the beginning, the only thing we could think about was just the way the name is said. But then also, you know, we were one of the MySpace bands that really broke through thanks to that site. And we used to search for music on there. It was always alphabetical. I know these are ridiculous mm-hmm. answers, but we honestly, God, have no idea what
yeah,
you
so
attribute it to.
You're as scratching your head as much as I am, which is crazy
yeah.
that you've gotten down to be like, oh, well, we start with A or at the beginning of the list. I mean,
right,
I guess
yeah.
it doesn't hurt a band. I never thought about alphabetically, you know, putting your name. You know, one thing that's funny about that, though, is you remember when Blink-182 put out the side project, Boxcar Racer?
Yeah, of course.
What comes after BL in the alphabet? And I went to the store and I saw, like, that Blink-182, and then right beside it was Boxcar Racer. I'm like, either that's a great, like, random mistake, or someone's a fucking genius to come up with that. Right? Do you ever think about that? That's a crazy thing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's bizarre.
I'm gonna name my next band, I'm naming Aardvark. Two A's.
There you go. Dude. Or, like, something right after Alisana, like Alien something.
There you go.
Alien Ant Farm, yeah, that's a great
know.
Idea.
There you go. Yeah, Michael Jackson covers all the way. No, it's just a crazy thing, though, man. Like, and I just remember being down there in South America, fucking every kid's wearing an Alisana shirt. Like, they're just talking about you guys like you're the Rolling Stones. yeah, like, did you guys just go there the first time and it was just huge all of a sudden?
Yeah.
Or did it kind of grow?
No, we played Monterrey, Mexico.
I mean, we were one of the first bands to go down there, so that might. But you go ahead, John.
Yeah, we definitely set off a trend there. Like, I think we were one of the first, you know, quote unquote, screamo American bands to go down there. So maybe that would have had a little bit something to do with it too. But you know, our first time there was in Monterey, and it was hundreds and hundreds of kids. We played for more kids at that first show in Mexico than we probably played for our entire tour in America. Like, it just didn't even make any sense at all. And
did they approach you to come down?
Yeah, yeah. They actually hit up an agent we were working with back then. And, you know, we at the time was like, cool, trip to Mexico, why not? Like, we figured we'd play for like 10 people.
Yeah. No, that's crazy. Do you remember what year that was, the first time you went down?
Jeez, man, 06. It was early.
Oh, wow. Really early.
It was before our first real record deal.
Yeah, that is super, super crazy. I think, I think when Silverstein went, I think it was later. I think it was 2009 was our first time, and I felt like we were kind of one of the first bands to go down there. And and you know, South America has been very good to us too, but it just is a crazy thing. Do you guys have plans to go back there anytime?
Yeah, we actually just played Knotfest in October, and we got to play Main Stage, which is really cool. Outside of Mexico,
so we went to South America with Crazy Town.
Yeah, Crazy Town?
Yeah.
Like, You're My Butterfly, Sugar Baby, that band?
Oh, yeah. The whole deal, man. The whole deal.
It was
Did you hang out with them?
Yeah, man, they're actually super nice guys, man. A lot of fun to hang out with. Super down
there.
That's
crazy. I remember the singer was like on one of those drug celebrity rehab shows. Or something.
Yeah.
So he's doing okay now, I guess. Hopefully.
Yeah.
Now, I gotta ask, like, I don't know if we've ever toured with like an actual, like, one hit wonder. I'm gonna call them. I'm putting them out there on blast as a one hit wonder. Now, what happens? Like, do people actually like know their whole record because that was when CDs were popular, so they buy it for the Butterfly song and then like they listen to it all and they know the songs? Or was it pretty much like no one really cared and then they just play that song and it's like goes crazy?
I mean, I would be lying if I said the crowd didn't react more to that song. I don't know if it necessarily means they didn't know the other ones, but they certainly I think they came for the one.
Certainly like that one.
That's right, no. No, I remember Bloodhound Gang was, what were they on? Some festivals or something we were doing, Bloodhound Gang. And they opened and closed with the Do It Like They Do on the Discovery Channel song. They played it first and last. Jeez, so I don't know how they managed to pull that off, but everybody was stoked, you know?
I have an incredible amount of respect for that. That's amazing. I want to do something like that.
Do you? Yeah, respect. Is that the right word? Respect?
Yeah.
Was just open and close your apology.
Now, with your guys, set lists and the songs you guys choose to play, obviously you have a quite a large body of work at this point. Have you guys? Well, I guess two questions. First of all, have you played the Annabelle songs like in order, like full records, or are there any plans to do like all three records or something like that? Or do you sometimes do like parts of the records, or how do you do that to try to tell the story of those records and of Annabelle?
So when The Emptiness came out, we did The Emptiness tour and we played the record front to back, the whole tour, which was actually pretty risky at the time because the record was new and we were sort of at the height of our popularity then, but we were like, you know what, this is what we want to do. It kind of goes in line with what we were talking about earlier, how we like artistically enjoy doing the things that we want to do. And so we did it and it went over really super well. In terms of the whole trilogy, we definitely explored the idea of doing like a one weekend only kind of thing where we do Thursday, Friday, Saturday night and do each of the three records, you know, back to night. But that would be a hell of a daunting task to play that much material, but it's definitely something we want to do. I think our fan base would be into it. It's kind of just finding where to do it so that it makes the most sense.
No, absolutely. Well, it's, you know, hey, you're DIY, you do whatever the fuck you want. So,
exactly.
That's pretty cool. And one other thing I noticed, and correct me if I'm wrong, but do you guys actually run your own VIP as well?
I started a company called Minky Stream.
I saw that. Where
we've done it for so many years, it was like, I just studied it and learned how to do it. It was like, just might as well cut up the middleman on it. It really makes sense to keep paying fees to somebody else for something we can do on our own.
No, that's cool. And have you branched out to do some other bands too?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we worked with five bands up to this point. Still trying to grow it, but you know, it's starting to get some legs to it now.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
So next time you guys do a tour, Shane, you should hit us up for me.
Yeah, I mean, SoundRink. We've used SoundRink, for the Silverstein stuff, and they've done a great job. They're a great company. But actually the last tour I did a solo tour for my solo project.
You went out with Mark, right? I did go with Mark.
So much fun. And that was different, very different for me, but I did my own VIP too. And it doesn't call the company. It was just like, hey, buy a VIP ticket. And then I just handled it myself.
Sure.
And it actually, you know, on that scale, a smaller scale that was my solo tour, it was actually very doable, and I think I would do that again because you're right, it really isn't that difficult to do your own VIP, and then of course then you know what the fans are seeing, you know what kind of experience the fans are getting and what level of I don't like to use the word customer service because it makes it sound like what we're doing is selling shit, but like, you know what I mean? But
no, but it's the truth.
Real.
Is, like,
it's
I like being able to be the the last man standing. Like, if something went wrong, I like being the one that gets to answer that question, as opposed to having our fans need to go through a third party to get anything fixed or solved or to make them happy. This way, I'm able to be the reason that they're, you know, like you said, satisfied at the end of the day.
That's really cool. Do you guys do VIP stuff in South America or Mexico?
No, not on that kind of level. They always end up conning us into some random shit where we gotta stand behind a table
for like 400 kids.
Well, the reason I ask is because they're fucking wild down there. Like, anybody listening to this, like, if you think shows in your hometown are crazy, like, if you live in, I don't know, Topeka, Kansas, or you know, or you live in Atlanta, Georgia, or you live in New York City, if you live in America or Canada or Europe, you haven't seen fucking anything until you go down to, like, Sao Paulo or Santiago, Chile or something, where it's, like, insane.
You're not kidding.
I don't even know if a VIP is, like, you could even do it. Like, there's people, like, freak out.
Oh, we definitely couldn't do it the same way we do it here. Like, we kind of do the mingle thing, you know, we just go around and hang out for an hour or whatever. I don't think we would survive in those parts of the world if we tried to do stuff like that.
No way in hell.
No, you
gotta draw a line. We love them, but you guys are crazy in South America. If you listen to this, I would be afraid.
Oh, yeah. And they will be. They will be listening to this. And I love you guys too. Absolutely. The first time we went down, and I said it was in 2009. We played in Peru, so we're excited. We've never been in these places before. I think this might have been the second show. So you know, we haven't quite figured out how everything works yet. So they pick us up from the airport. And we get to the venue, and there's just this crowd of people, like a huge, huge sea of kids waiting, you know, for us. So our van rolls up, and there's, like, police there, and they have, like, clubs and everything. And I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, this is completely insane. Like, there's no way, you know, they need to be here. And the promoter came in, he spoke English, and he said, hey, come out of the van, go directly in the venue, don't stop and talk to the kids, whatever, right? So I'm like, yeah, whatever. So I kind of get out, I guess I was the last person out, so at the back of the line, everyone else has already gone inside, and I stop, and I look at the crowd, and I smile, and they're cheering, you know, and I'm feeling good about myself, and I'm not feeling in danger at all, and then I reach my hand to, like, shake someone's hand, and they took me. They just took me. And I was, like, so scared. Like, I was being pulled in. I couldn't move. I couldn't do anything. Next thing I know, the cops are just beating these kids up with clubs.
Oh, God.
And I was like,
what did you do?
I know, right? I was like, fuck, I should have just listened to this fucking guy and went inside. But, I was like, I didn't want to look like an asshole, like, just walking in and not, like, at least, you know, saying, hey. And I was excited. So, but then these kids getting beaten with a club.
It's a reality.
I definitely get separation anxiety when we're down there. Like, when you look up and you realize you're alone, you're like, oh, shit. Like, where is anybody that I know? I'm about to get the warm.
I'll never forget, I think it's the first time we played Bogota, Colombia, that we pull up in our van, and it was like The Walking Dead. Like, literally, like, faces smeared against the van.
Absolutely.
Like, hands everywhere, and then the guy was like, all right, you ready? And then counts to three, slides the door open, he has his feet against the seat of the van, and kicks backwards to blast a hole through the humans, and then we all dart through the hole and, like, into the venue. I was like, what is going on? This isn't real life.
I love it because he's like, are you ready? On three, we're going to go. I'm like, what do you mean, are we ready? We're going to go on three. We're not ready.
It's so funny. And it's so true. Yeah, that, like, we call it the zombie apocalypse when we're, like, in the van. It's usually after the show, I find, when you're, like, they're waiting. And then as you pull away, they're all, like, hitting the van and pushing the van and shaking it. And you're just like, what's going on? That's crazy, man.
Gotta love them, though. But they really are so excited that you came down there. So it's an overwhelming feeling, to be sure, to know that you're really doing that for those guys.
It comes from a place of love, but it's terrifying. Scary love.
Scary love. No, it's true. So you guys are going to head back, I'm sure, sometime. The shows down there, do you have any specific memories of some of the, like, craziest, like or best sets?
I think for me, it's just, you know, in America, you have fans that are great, and they sing along, and they enjoy it. It's all well and good, but they all know every single word to every single song that you've written. Like, it's unbelievable. And, you know, they don't even speak English, most of them, and they're able to sing every song in perfect English. And I think that's right. Always the most overwhelming feeling. It's just like that somebody cares that much about your music that they have it so incredibly, your entire catalog memorized.
I'll never forget our first time in Guadalajara, Mexico, when we played a venue, and they had like a giant chain link metal fence in between the stage and the crowd. I mean, the whole thing. I mean, like a story or two tall. I can't remember how tall it was. But the kids were climbing on it and then broke it in half. And I'm like, oh my God, it's going down.
That's
it
so
got,
intense.
It got very real, but it was awesome.
Yeah, no, that's crazy. Do any of you guys, or anyone in the band speak Spanish?
I speak enough to get by. I could survive there if I ever got lost, but I don't know that I could have any meaningful conversation.
I just wondered if there was anything like that. Like, there are some bands I think that do pretty well in South America, and part of it is either because some of their members have heritage that's, you know, South American or, you know, Latino, or some of them do speak Spanish, which is, you know, you guys probably should take some Spanish lessons.
I took Latin in high school. dead language, yeah. Useless.
There you go.
How's that working out for you today,
good
man?
Good thinking, Dennis.
Practical Latin for you, helping out.
I know. Well, you know, it was for the science. My binomial nomenclature is on point, but unfortunately, with talking to the fans, it doesn't help too much.
That's funny, man. I want to talk also about getting older. And I know you guys actually were kind of an older band when you sort of started getting successful. You guys were already older than, you know, most bands that reached that peak. So, like, Sean, I think you're actually older than me even.
I am 37.
Which is crazy. I'll be 36 in a week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, if any listeners want to buy me a birthday present, absolutely.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you. I just kind of wonder how that is for you guys. And as the you know, your band's success has sort of, you know, you said it came to kind of a peak, and now you have your core fan base and you're able to still do this. But how is that approach to getting older? And I know, Sean, you have a wife and children. Dennis, I don't know if you're still partying as hard as you ever did. Maybe you do. I hope so. How is that going for you guys?
I think it's more about time management than anything else. It's not about being old and feeling old and having that affect anything that we do. It's more like, okay, we're not 20, 21 years old anymore. This can't be the only thing we do with every day of our lives. You know, people have families they want to start, you know, different jobs they want to get into, just other ventures to experience and try to do. And we're really lucky in the sense that all of us still keep Alisana as a priority. And when we want to do something, we're always down to do it. But we're able to do it, you know, strictly on our own terms. We don't have anybody, you know, breathing down our necks or barking at us to stay on the road. And we don't really need to stay on the road. We can do things like this, you know, go out for 2 or 3 weeks together, have a blast, you know, get to see the fans, but then, you know, return to whatever it is else that we're doing.
Yeah. And I don't want to break your heart, but I actually quit drinking a while ago.
Did you? No, that's good. That's great news, Dennis. That's great news.
But yeah, it's one of those things where now I play a lot more video games on the road. It's been interesting, especially like, I got like nephews at home and family. So it's kind of weird being out on the road because I'm so happy with my life at home. But when you get up on stage, man, and you just, every time I get in front of a crowd, I remember why I'm out there. And so I don't think that goes away, no matter how old you are. And whenever I see this, like, I saw Judas Priest and see these, like, 60, 70-year-old dudes and tight leather shuffling around stage. I'm like, oh man, they're really getting out there. But I can imagine just still seeing that many people who are so motivated by what you poured your soul into. I mean, that never goes away. So it's cool, especially with younger bands now, just getting to connect with them and share like a little bit of wisdom, you know, that you've got, maybe help their climb go a little bit easier for them, learn from the mistakes that you made. It's been really rewarding.
No, that's great, man. That's great. No, I'm glad to hear that you guys are doing so well. You know, not just the band continuing, but also personally. You mentioned that you guys. So some of you guys have jobs when you're not on the road. What are you guys doing? I mean, I know Sean's running a record company, but
yeah, I actually print T-shirts for this crazy old honky tonk guy back in Raleigh. And learning how to do that's been super fun. It will totally transition into doing it on my own once I've mastered my art, and hopefully printing shirts, you know, with Sean's label and hands it down. I definitely dream of being the old biker dude who runs the merch company for the kids out in North Carolina. Get this rock band and this t-shirt and just completely have control of everything for us.
I mean, a wise man said, you know, to me once that if you're in a band and you don't have your own merch company and you're not printing your own merch, you're an idiot. So I'm an idiot. Therefore, I am an idiot. But no, it really is something that is viable, and that would be a great approach. What about some of the other guys? What do they do when they're not on tour?
So Pat plays in another band that he got off the ground a couple years ago called Versus Me. They do some touring. Shane bartends at a bar. We'll just call it a bar.
Okay, that's good. It's good place to bartend.
At a night bar, his beauty is appreciated.
Yes, his good looks do not go unnoticed at the bar that he works at.
Jake Campbell is a master salesman of some really strange industrial coating systems, but I mean, Jake could sell dirt to a grave digger, so he makes a killing doing it. To support those two kids and that wife he's got at home.
Jeremy's
a mechanic. He works
of course, Jeremy's a mechanic. Jeremy's the coolest dude I've ever met. So he rides motorcycles and works on old VW vans.
Oh, sick. Yeah, that's rad. No, you said you guys are always down to do it. Like, you're always down to you know, hey, we're going to do this, let's all do it. But it must be challenging with everyone having different schedules and different things on the go.
Yeah, and it certainly adds more of a challenge than when we all had nothing else to do when we were younger. Yep. But everything, we just make sure we plan it out far enough in advance, you know. And luckily for everyone who does work jobs, you know, their employers are completely on board with what they do and, you know, kind of knew it going into it, what it is they do.
Yeah. No, that's really, really great, and I wonder about that. And I mean, I don't want to be disrespectful or anything, but, you know, when you're at a point where, obviously, at the height of your peak, you know, when you guys were doing this band full-time, you guys didn't have other jobs, I assume. There was a point when you guys were really focused 100% on Alisana. Now, there comes a point where something has got to give, right? Either, you know, you're not able to make as much money, you know, something's got to give now. Where does the decision come into play to still keep the band going and kind of transition it into a part-time thing rather than just be like, you know what, we had some good years, but now it's time for a new chapter of my life?
Yeah, I think it's definitely, I mean, it's a band-by-band thing, and it depends on the guys. And with our guys, we're all family guys. When you get down to the end of it, like, you know, Sean's got a wife, two kids. So does Jake. I've got five brothers and sisters, nephews and stuff. And you kind of have to figure out, okay, we're going to keep doing it. How are we going to make it work? And by starting our own label and being able to do it at home in Raleigh has really made what seems impossible to get that balance between family and work actually possible. So it's been incredible for us. But it's really, I mean, I guess that's the motivator. Like, we decided, like, you know, we could keep grinding full time and, you know, stay on top of, like, playing enormous venues and going on monster tours and never seeing our families. Or, like, we just really love what we do. I love playing, like, grungy dive bars, and I don't mind doing it forever. And as long as, like, you know, everybody's comfortable with that, and I get to do it
and go out there and do it for the reasons I want to, and then still have a connection with my family at home, I'll never stop doing that.
So. I say this to my kids. I say this to all the bands, that are on my label and stuff, you know, and I really live by it. Success is what you want it to be. And for every band, the way we do it, they might not define that as success, but the way I look at it is this is the 13th year we've been getting to do this, and we still, whenever we want, can pick up, get together, and go play a tour and make some money and see some fans. And you know, to be able to still do that is incredible. The fact that we even have fans who still care is just amazing. And you know, we're just here to keep riding the wave, man. And if people want to keep buying our records and seeing our shows, then we're more than happy to keep doing it. And you know, this is the thing, the six of us would be getting together to play shows even if it wasn't this, because we love each other and we love playing together. And you know, it's basically an excuse to a couple times a year go on like a 2 or 3 week vacation with your buddies and play rock.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. So how much longer is this tour going on? I'm just wondering if this, when this comes out, if people will still be able to catch you guys on tour.
2 more weeks.
There's a pretty good chance then, yeah.
Yeah, we did the East Coast installment of this anniversary tour back in September, and now we're doing the West Coast leg. That's another way we kind of do it now, is we split up the tour, and that way we're not going for 6-7 weeks at a time. We can do the same tour on both coasts and, you know, spread it out.
No, that's a smart thing. A lot of bands I see doing that these days, and it's definitely makes sense to get a break. So the label side of things, Sean, that you're doing, it's called Revival Records. That's right, right? That's the name of the label?
Revival Recordings.
Revival Recordings.
Records,
I'm so sorry. I am so sorry about that. Why did you choose to go with recordings and not records? Just because you thought it was cool? What's the story there?
I guess twofold. I like the way it flows. I just like the way it sounds. But also, you know, yeah, sure, people still do vinyls for, like, you know, collector's sake, but are we really making records anymore? Like, you're kind of just making digital recordings. That's sort of where the world is at.
That's fair.
Yeah,
that's
just
fair.
That's sort of reason.
I never knew that either.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
That was a great
question, man. Yeah. Hey, thank you. No, I have a record label that I started years back called Verona Records, and I thought about doing like the recordings thing or whatever, but I was just like, nah, I just want to blend in with the rest. I don't know.
Everybody still calls it Revival Records anyway, so I guess it didn't count.
Yeah, exactly, right. So how has that been, though, doing the label side of things? Obviously, you've had a lot of experiences with different labels. Now you're that guy. Is it weird sometimes seeing things from other bands' perspectives? And how is it like just daily, day-to-day operations dealing with bands?
Yeah, it's definitely weird wearing the other hat, so to speak.
Yeah.
But it definitely put me in some positions where I was like, oh, man, maybe we were kind of dicks back then. Because, like, now I got bands asking certain questions or wanting certain things, and I'm like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, oh, I guess we were that exact same pain in the ass 10 years ago. But, yeah, I think part of the fun of what I'm trying to do and the type of label I'm trying to be is I'm trying to be an artist-first label. You know, one of my parts of my business model is to keep bands out of debt. You know, so many bands come to labels and all they want is money thrown at them and this, that, and the other, and I'm sort of there to help explain to them that, you know, this money, you owe that money back at the end of the day, and the less debt you get into, the more likely you are to have long-term and sustained success. I think my years as an artist helped me to connect to bands. I think they trust me more out of the gate because I do wear both hats. And, you know, I'm not an artist who's trying to screw other artists, you know, and I think that's helped a lot in growing the type of roster that I want and now have.
Yeah, I think that's a word everybody in a band needs to look up, recoupable. What recoupable means.
Yeah, I know. It's funny. The whole idea of how a label works, you know, where they say, oh, no, your royalty rate is 15%. But what they don't tell you is even when you finally recoup all that money, you know, from all that stuff, the label's already made the other 85%. So, like, you could be so far in the hole, and the label be like, well, you know, you're not recouped, like you're so unsuccessful. Meanwhile, you know,
your 15%, which is actually a pretty good royalty rate, they're getting 85%, and they're already, like, they've already made their money back, like, so many times. So that's a weird concept, but at the same time, the label does take a risk, and I'm sure, Sean, you've had your fair share of bands that have lost money. I mean,
definitely. Right? That's the thing, and that's why we try to explain right out of the gate, too, is, you know, I understand that they, as the artist, have to trust me, but I have to trust them, too. It definitely goes both ways, and there's risks on both sides, and there's investments on both sides. You know, I think the more a label and an artist has a symbiotic relationship, and they have the same vision going on, I think it's always going to lead to more success.
Absolutely, I agree with that, and that's part of the reason why I think, like, 50-50 deals with labels are really, really good. You know, when you can work that out, that deal, then you're on the same page. You know, with every dollar gets, you know, everyone's fighting for the same thing. So that's great, Sean. I'm really happy to see that's been successful for you. And are there any new bands? A lot of the listeners of the show like to check out new music. Are there any bands you can shout out that you've put out, or records you put out that you think the people should check out?
Yeah, there's two records coming out over the next couple months. There are actually two bands that are out on tour with us right now, a band called Versus and a band called Charlatan. The Charlatan record is super, super cool. It's kind of reminiscent of older Foxy Shazam. I don't know if you're ever into them.
Oh, yeah.
Great band. Super cool stuff. And then Versus is cool because they're a concept band, but they discuss issues of mental health and suicide, things like that. They actually rallied around something they call the Versus Movement, which is trying to get kids who are struggling with depression and other mental disorders to kind of rally together and realize that they're not alone on things. So.
Well, that's great, and that's good that you're doing not just you know, the man in the suit, the label. You actually care about what you're putting out, and what the bands are trying to say as well is important to you. So that's
very
awesome,
much so,
man. I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I do appreciate you guys spending this time and doing this on your day off. You know, I know you got some, like, do you guys do a family dinner? That's the thing bands like to do.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Do a family dinner on days off? Here's the thing, right? Here's the thing. I don't like Applebee's, right? I don't think any of us even do, but that it's always...
That's where we're going. We're going to Applebee's.
You know, that's funny. Beartooth, that's Beartooth spot too. They love Applebee's. And I'm like, yo, Applebee's sucks. Like, it's like
really
the worst
does.
Of all of the chains. It's the worst one.
It's so true, but for some unknown reason, that is just where we always go. I feel like if anybody would look out against it, we probably would change it. Nobody ever speaks up.
It's probably the Long Island. I'm going to get it.
Yeah.
It's the Long Island, man. I think it's $6 Long Island.
Yeah, that's probably, knowing Beartooth, that's absolutely why they go to Applebee's. Absolutely why. Those guys can drink. That's crazy. No, I'd say Silverstein, we used to be an Olive Garden band. We'll still go for the Unlimited Soup Salad Breadsticks. But now I'd say these days we're kind of into P.F. Chang's. If we can get a P.F. Chang's going, oh, that's a nice day off meal.
We're gonna
end up in a goddamn Applebee's, I know. Or Yard House. Yard House is like the best, man. Right. Oh God, I love Yard House. They're getting more popular. They're opening up everywhere. Yard House, check it out. They got the Gardein menu. I'm into it. Well, hey guys, thanks again so much. So good talking to you guys, catching up. I hope I can see you guys around. But tell the people what's up next for Alisana, either records, touring, whatever you guys are doing. What can people look out for?
We're going to do a few more international dates this year. We're going down to Mexico City to do the On Throw Wings betting wax tour that we're doing here in America.
Yep.
And then we are embarking on the next record, which is kind of exciting because this is the first time in 8-9 years that we're starting about Annabelle.
Yeah. Annabelle's gone. I don't know the story. I don't know if she's dead, but Annabelle is, you've moved on. That ship has sailed. Well, that's great. That's great, guys. And yes, thanks again for your time, Sean and Dennis. Two of the best. So thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, dude. Good catch up.
Yeah, man. Great talking to you,
take
brother.
Take care. Have a great day, guys.
Later, man.
Later, man.
Yep, see ya. So there it is with Sean and Dennis. That was a good chat. I'm so sorry about the quality.
I will not do that again to you guys. I will not, okay? I strive for perfection on this damn show, and I will not be so loose with my quality. Hey, thanks again, everybody, for tuning in. I'll be back next week, Monday. It will not be a holiday anymore, but Trump will still be president, unfortunately. Well, yeah, maybe not. Probably, though. I'd say if you were gonna, if I was a gambling man, well, I wouldn't really make much on that bet, would I? Hey, but we'll be back Monday, an all new great episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. Thank you so much for joining me. All I ask is you check out the All Access Club. It's really, really great, and I'm really, really having a good time with it. Again, the link is leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. I will leave you with the tune, as always. Here's a classic, Alisana on Lead Singer Syndrome. We'll see you next week.
Sweat drips in my eyes. Screams of lust we cry.
And to think that she will not be scared. Oh, yeah.
Oh, look, hey, you're still here. Hey, you're still looking fantastic. Before you go, I just wanted, well, I kind of wanted to give a big shout out, actually, to a sponsor that's been really, really kind to us over the last few months. They're called Loot Crate. And I really hope that we can still continue to work with them. It's been really fun promoting something that is actually cool. They've been sending me these boxes every month, and I've really been enjoying them. So please check out Loot Crate. The link, again, is lootcrate.com/leadsinger. And if you enter promo code leadsinger, you will save $3 off a subscription. I think the subscriptions are down to like $15.99 or something right now. Like, they're really cheap. So we're talking about well under $20 to get 4 to 6 items of unique pop culture stuff every month. So that's all I'll say about that. Again, it's lootcrate.com/leadsinger. And thanks again for all your support.